Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today, Daniel McAdams. Daniel, good to see you.
Good morning, Dr. Paul.
Well, good. It is a good morning. I wish the world goodness and grace and peace, but we'll have to sort it out. I guess our president wasn't listening carefully to our program because we had suggested rather strongly that this sanction bill wasn't in our best interest. It wasn't making America first, and it was very complex. It looks like the House and the Senate were overwhelmingly in support of, escalating the conflict with Russia. So, but he did go ahead and sign it. He had some reservations, which might be helpful. The argument was there was a slight delay and that Trump has a moral victory because he said that he was holding back for one thing, that he would have the authority to remove the sanctions if he saw fit with Russia. But the deep state people, who generally are very much in charge, said, no, that's way too much authority for the president. So that is the most controversial, and that's the only thing that Trump said he was questioning. But then again, the whole principle of sanctions was fully endorsed by the people in Washington. But I don't think when the American people know about it, they'll say, hey, this is great. We love the going in this direction because it's going to make a more peaceful world, because it won't.
Yeah, that's indeed. And he did question the constitutionality in a signing statement. He said he has some reservations. It erodes presidential authority. He said he'll carry out the law, however, but he'll do it consistent with his constitutional authority. And there's probably some wiggle room in interpretation. But, you know, the bill itself, it cites Russia for three-backed coup on Ukraine. Russian aggression in Syria. Well, Russia came into Syria at the request of the legitimate government of Syria. How is that aggression? And, of course, interference in U.S. elections, which is unproven. The only other thing about signing the bill is that, okay, he signed the bill, but yesterday Pence was in Georgia, I think, and he said the president and Congress are on the same page when it comes to Russia, talking about the bill. And this is a bad bill. This is tying our hands. It's not good. The president's unhappy. So his own cabinet is in disarray, I think.
Yeah, and we haven't been too happy with some of those appointments, but there are days now that I'm sort of glad that Tillerson's there doing a little bit of challenging of this. So this is the whole thing. But, you know, there was an interesting article yesterday by Federico Peresini, and he talked a lot about the deep state and how all this stuff comes together. And I found that very fascinating. And, of course, he was dealing with this whole subject of what you just mentioned, this conflict and why the sanctions are put out. But I thought he came across pretty objective in this article about how the ducks are lining up and what the ultimate goal is of the deep state, because he really was talking about the deep state here, and he talked about it in a way that he brings it together without claiming, well, I know these six individuals are in charge of the deep state. It's not quite like that.
Yeah.
But it's interesting on the people behind the scenes and out in the open are able to get the Congress to go along, with promoting the conflict. Because I think if there was a hands-off understanding and Trump had his way with Russia, I don't think we'd be talking about the building up of this conflict. I mean, like accusing Russia, oh, they're planning to invade the Baltics, this sort of thing. So it's just aggravated, and somebody wants it to be aggravated. Somebody wants chaos, and somebody wants us to be fighting with Russia, and there are several groups that would like to see that.
Yeah, and the piece, we noticed it on Zero Hedge, and if someone out there wants to read it, Sabotaging Russia-U.S. Relations for Good is the title, and it really is worth a read. It struck both of our attention this morning, and I think the reason why is because he very succinctly, I think, put things together in a way, as you say, that seems pretty objective. You know, he said two things. The deep state tried to sabotage any rapprochement with Russia. The first thing they did was the U.S. bombing of Syrian troops in Deir Ezzor. And this was under the Obama administration when they first announced a ceasefire, and that blew that up. And he says the second sabotage was the sanctions bill, which has gone through, and it was successful. And I think he gives a nice little synopsis of what the deep state wants strategically from the U.S. It's based on the continued need for the U.S. to have enemies requiring major arms investments. Surprise, surprise. He calls it the 4+1 theory. We have to maintain as enemies Russia, China, Iran, North Korea, and the plus one is terrorism. And that would give the excuse to have the U.S. military empire essentially over most of the globe. And I think it really that really explains a lot of what's happening, don't you?
Yeah, and I think that the indication is that the neocons got very frightened to think that we were getting way too friendly with the country and that we could get along, because they need chaos and they need the incentive to be involved, maintain the empire, also these alliances. But it's interesting that two of the countries that are most involved in directing our foreign policy, and they are so different in many ways, but they are very much in tune with promoting this policy of fighting with Russia. And that, of course, is Saudi Arabia, which can't stand, the Iranians. And then we have Israel that doesn't want to see this because they see that a threat to their security. But they are very much together. And yet, if you listed what the Saudis believe in and what the Israelis believe in, you know, philosophically and theologically and so many other things, and the principles of democracy, it's so different. But on this is very, very important, and they want this to happen because they correctly see it that the success of Assad and the Russians right now has some significance to it. That doesn't mean it's right or wrong, but it's just significant for the neocons because it goes against their plans. And I keep thinking, you know, that so far, most of this thing going on in 15, 18 years has helped the Iranians, and they're supposed to be our big enemies. So it's helping the Iranians. And now, of course, we've known for a long time, even at the beginning of the invasion of Afghanistan, we talked and they talked about, oil pipelines, how we get gas line and into Europe. And I think it's something that it looks like the Shia Crescent is a real possibility and it's building. And then when I look at the map and I look at the long-term strategy of China, that if China ever gets even closer to this group, you're talking about a large segment of the world population, especially if they get this modern-day Silk Road in. Yeah. And I understand they spend a lot of money on it already.
Yes.
And that sort of connects these countries. And as we get weaker, it's going to be more available to them. But I think this article pointed out that one of the strategies, that they're internationalists in the sense that they're opposite of Trump. It's not America, not America first. It's internationalism. And maybe America has just overstepped their bounds and we have to tone it down and take some of this power and authority away from America because maybe they don't think we're doing the right thing. and now they're, strongly in support of chaos, and they feel almost obsessed with making sure that we fight with Russia, and they're winning. And not only are there outside forces doing this, but they're inside too. When you say we have no idea which side the CIA is on and whether they orchestrate foreign policy or what, but we also know that domestically they're very much in control of how the Congress works, and the strategy right now looks in the big picture, it looks like the neocons aren't doing badly.
Yeah, and the one thing they are good at, they're not good at creating democracy overseas, but they're very good at creating chaos overseas. So that's one thing they're
doing.
serves their interest. But, I think this part about Israel and Saudi Arabia was very interesting because he talks about, of course, this is objectively two of the strongest foreign lobbies in Washington, D.C., the Saudi and the Israeli lobby. Absolutely true. The deep state, he says, is sympathetic to the two lobbies, which I think is pretty accurate. But he also points out that the way Syria is going right now is the worst imaginable for the Saudis and the Israelis, who have invested so heavily in overthrowing Assad. Because if this U.S. pullout of support for the CIA's, supporting the jihadists there, if that really is a fact, and it looks like a Syrian government victory over ISIS and over the opposition. You're going to have a Syria led by Assad, allied with Hezbollah, Russia, Iran, Lebanon, and Iraq. So it really is the opposite turnout of what Iran and of what Israel and Saudi Arabia wants. So what's the next move?
You know, this makes me think about what could have been. What if there were solutions that were more local and working for peace? Well, if the Saudis can get along with Israel, you know, why couldn't the Saudis get along with Assad? But the reason is, I think, it's Saudis against the Persians. That is long-term, and it's control of oil, it's financial, it's probably banking, military-industrial complex, and all of this. But in theory, you could make the case and said, well, they should be capable, some of these people should be capable of putting up with Assad. It's been done in the past. Wasn't after 9/11, didn't Assad actually offer some troops or support for the
United States? He did help the U.S., yeah.
Yeah, they were offering, and I think Iran did too. They were exchanging some of the radicals, but then we come along, we get Trump, who gives a little bit of hope and a little bit of more independent thinking. So he says, yeah, we should talk to the Russians, but we can't talk to those terrible Iranians, you know. They're the really bad people.
Yeah. And his you know, he says, let's talk to the Russians, and then everyone he has, maybe with the exception of Tillerson, is a Russia hater, is virulently anti-Russia for no reason. But, you know, the other thing that struck me in the article I thought was really good is the way he outlined Trump's struggle with the deep state. And it's probably an overused term, but for lack of a more accurate one, I think it's good to use. That he points out, and this makes a lot of sense, he tried to placate the deep state at first by offering Flynn's head on a platter. You know, he thought he was going to make a deal. Okay, I'll give you this, guys, back off. But in reality, it didn't work. So then he admitted that the Russians were involved somehow in the elections. He didn't want to, but he admitted something like this. He thought that was throwing them a bone. That didn't work. Then he launched missiles at Syria on a fictitious idea that they use gas. That didn't work. And what the author says is now basically he's out of ammo, and the coup de grace is the sanctions bill. His hands are tied, and it sounds like a checkmate.
Yeah, and, you know, he and Trump and Putin had this meeting, and as a consequence of that, there was this ceasefire, which seems to almost be a capitulation from the neocons' argument side, a capitulation that the Assad faction has won and the Russians have won. This would make the neocons so upset, and this is probably very significant in that it's incentivizing the neocons here at home. They've maybe given up on using the military approach, and that's why the sanction approach has come, and the building up of the animosity, against Russia. And everybody's vulnerable if you cherry pick all the things that you're going to accuse somebody of. But the incessant, continuous 24 hours a day that the Russians are coming, you know, they finally have an effect, but it doesn't look like the neocons are going to be very happy. They're looking to this. I think they've decided they have to destroy Trump, you know, because he's unreliable. He's not one of us. And matter of fact, yesterday we talked about the new foreign policy. They don't even like libertarian, but at least Trump is not controllable, even though he's been hurt by capitulating on occasion, and then he got stung, so it's up for grabs. So I think their ultimate goal, of course, is to destroy Trump, and chaos is coming, and who knows what will be the consequence.
And the thing that makes it even more difficult for him, for Trump, is that the liberals have aligned with the neocons on this. You know, they are both really together on this idea of pushing the Russia thing to the point where the president, and here are two superpowers that could destroy the earth, and they meet a couple of times on the fringes of this summit, and somehow it's collusion somehow, how dare he meet and talk with this guy? See, that just proves it. It's gone beyond the realm.
But you have to expand the definition of liberals. You know, there's a few in the Republican Party, too. So you have the old line party hacks that don't like Trump, anybody but Trump.
Yeah.
They get along with this, and they work with the Democrats now. And, of course, there were some people who were delighted, and I have no personal love for any political party, and the Republican Party was not necessarily the vehicle to bring peace and prosperity to this country. So they got together, and they think they're going to solve the problem this way. But I'll tell you, the Democrats and the Republicans, you know, are the problem, and they may well destroy both parties. The Democrats, it's amazing how they get the attention on the Republicans are falling apart. They did it even before the election.
Yeah.
The Republicans were on the defensive, and then that happened. But now the Republicans are divided, and you have the Democrats here. They don't know what they stand for because they both stand for a philosophy that doesn't work. Yeah. Then you have the Republicans there doing this, and then they're all outside that. But it's probably Trumpism against those who are coalescing together. All the interventionists, liberals, moderates in the Republican Party who will work, with the Democrats and socialists and all these other people, whether it ever gets named the party, I think that's where the power is, and I think that's where the neocons are, and that's why this political chaos in this country is not going to go away. I think as the economy comes down, the blame is going to be there, and I think the Federal Reserve can bring the economy down whenever they want to, and I think that Trump has set himself up for a real experience by bragging about how he brought about this great health in the stock market. Everybody's wealthy now. So I think it's a very, very shaky, and that may be the crowning blow. Because all of a sudden, if we start acting like if we can't afford free health care for everybody, people are going to start talking and thinking like they live in Venezuela if we're not careful. What do you have to say for a summary?
Well, I think there's one thing we haven't talked about yet, and I think it is the wild card. We've alluded to it in many shows in the past, and that's polls that have shown the American people are with us, more or less, in the vast majority, opposing war, concerned about war, not liking aggressive foreign policy. I think the American people are the wild card in this. The question is, what will they do? What can they do? How can they keep themselves from being propagandized? It's a big question.
Right. And I found this article and what we're talking about fascinating because it's talking about the deep state. There was a time when you mentioned deep state and you were written off. You're some type of conspiracy nut. But everybody uses the term now. And it is not a monolith. There's not a group of 6, 8, 10 people who control it. It's a coalition. And I think it's an ideological coalition that brings together a country like Israel and Saudi Arabia. And everybody acts in their own self-interest and they have influence. And that's what happens in pure democracy. You know, everybody say, we got to go around the world and spread democracy. But look at what it has spread in this country. Pure democracy, all you have to have is the clout of 51% of the vote, and then you become the dictatorship of the majority. And but the deep state is there, but I think it's philosophic, and it's different forms of interventionism. Of course, we would like to lead the charge against interventionism when the government pursues it in the wrong sort of way, that is, controlling our lives, the economy, or foreign policy. But the coalition of individuals who want to rip up the status quo in order to reorganize the world, they want chaos, and that's one of the goals that they talk about. Maybe the end of the American empire is coming, and we have Trump that's challenging that, and a lot of people are sympathetic to it. But I tell you, there's a lot of people out there that are going to be affected and they should be concerned, but we need to sort it out. But I think understanding what's going on behind the scenes and how the system operates and how they can automatically take a situation where there was a bit of a peace dividend, us traveling and trading and friends with Russia, then all of a sudden flipped over and become a daily occurrence. And I think of the two major incidents was the previous administration. One was the coup in Ukraine, and the other one was Assad has to go. And that is very, very aggressive, and it was done, in a party that was supposed to be less militant. And since that time, we've had nothing but chaos, and all of a sudden, you know, the preaching, the control, the media, and everything else is hate Russia, there's a war coming, and we have to support anything we can do to stop the evil Russians from tearing up the world. And I think that's very misleading. And of course, if we'd stick to our guns about dealing with what's best for America, which means that we ought to have peace and prosperity through a financial system and an economic system that recognizes individual liberty, we would do a lot better off if we could do that. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.